Welcome everyone. Call to order the June 16th, 2021 meeting of the Ventura Fork District. Can I have a roll call, please?
Commissioner Gardena.
Here.
Commissioner Ashworth. Commissioner Ashworth?
Can't hear you,
but you're here. Commissioner Blumenberg?
Here.
Commissioner...
Can you hear me now?
Yep. Yes. Commissioner Ashworth, are you here?
Yes, I'm here.
Commissioner Stevens?
Here.
And Commissioner Brennan will be absent today.
Okay, very good. Thank you. The General Manager would like to make a comment regarding our agenda?
Yeah, for the closed session agenda, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, Commissioners, item 2B is in Brian. I would like to ask that be removed from tonight's agenda.
Okay, very good. Okay, so just want to, I guess we don't have a formal approve the agenda, but I guess what I will ask for is a roll call for our closed session agenda as revised.
Sure.
Why not?
Okay. And you're going to make that motion?
Yes.
I'll second that motion.
Okay. Roll call?
Yeah.
Commissioner Gardena?
Yes.
Commissioner Ashworth?
Yeah.
Commissioner Blumenberg?
Yes.
And Commissioner Stevens?
Yes.
Vote carries 4-0.
Okay, very good. We'll now go to our public communications, a chance for members of the public to comment on items on our closed session agenda as revised. Do we have anyone here wishing to make a comment? Not seeing any? Okay, we'll close the public comment portion and we will convene to our closed session. I'll wait a minute. Good. Welcome everyone. I'd like to call to order the June 16th, 2021 Ventura Fork District meeting. Let's start with our Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Very nice. Okay, roll call, please.
Yeah. Commissioner Gardena.
Here.
Commissioner Ashworth.
Here.
Commissioner Blumenberg?
Here.
Commissioner Stevens?
Here.
And Commissioner Brennan will be absent today.
Okay, very good. Next item is adoption of the agenda. What is the pleasure of the commissioners tonight?
I'll make a motion to adopt the agenda as presented.
I'll second.
All right, we have a motion and a second to adopt the agenda as presented. Can I have a roll call, please?
Commissioner Gardena?
Yes.
Commissioner Ashworth?
Yes.
Commissioner Blumenberg?
Yes.
Commissioner Stevens?
Yes.
Vote carries 4-0.
Very good. Next item is approval of the minutes of the May 19th, 2021 regular meeting. Commissioners?
Well, I had a question, I think a possible correction. Oh. It's a minor issue, but on page 9... Jackie Gardena is identified as the vice chairman.
Oh.
And she had that opportunity but declined it.
I got it.
That'll teach you, Jackie. All right, very good. Anything else with respect to those minutes?
So with that correction, I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
I'll second it.
All right. We have a motion and a second to approve the minutes of May 19th, 2021 with the correction so noted. Could I have a roll call?
Commissioner Gardena?
Yes.
Commissioner Ashworth?
Yes.
Commissioner Blumenberg?
Yes.
Commissioner Stevens?
Yes.
Vote carries 4-0.
Very good. Okay. Our next item is public communications, an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items that are not on our agenda. I have a note here, and this is not an action item, on our agenda, so I'm going to ask that you give your comments now to Public Communications. Sam, it says you have a comment on one of our administrative items. Are you there, Sam?
Yes. Can you hear me, Commissioner?
Yes, we can, Sam. Please go ahead.
Well, I'm not sure. Are you referring to my comments on the consent agenda?
No. I have a note here. You wanted to comment on one of our administrative items, legal counsel report.
Oh, yes. I was assuming it would be after the legal counsel report, but I can comment prior. My question is a simple question in that I noted in the closed session there's nothing on there on litigation or discussion or anything, which means it probably can't be discussed. But I wish that the court would take note of the public documents that are on the court's dockets with regard to its litigation. Recently, there are at least two, potentially three instances that I saw of the court's legal approach and the court not being pleased, and I would just advise the commissioners to be potentially looking at the court dockets with the public information that's available there.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that, Sam. Appreciate it. Okay. Is there anyone else with us tonight that wants to comment on an item not on our agenda? That would be raising your hand via Zoom or star 9 on the phone. Okay. Not seeing any. Okay, we'll close the public communications and move on to our closed session report. Counselor?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The board met in closed session, discussed and reviewed those items on closed session number 1 and number 2. The board gave direction to staff as to how to proceed. On item number 3, the board conducted a review of general counsel. No action was taken that was reportable under the Brown Act.
All right. Thank you very much, Andy. Board communications. Opportunity for board members to share any comments. Ev, see your hand up there.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Two things. I was involved in a safety seminar at the Venture Yacht Club the other weekend, and a comment was made by a couple of people who are liveaboards, and they were concerned that when we tried to access fire hoses that are within marinas, they had passed their useful life. And they asked me to just raise that issue as part of our next meeting, which I agreed to, and maybe that's something that could be a longer discussion. I'm happy to talk to John Higgins about it, but they had asked that I bring this up at our next meeting. And so, John Higgins, I'll follow up with you if that is Secondly, Chris, I had an abstract accepted by the Aquaculture America folks. They were having a national meeting in San Antonio in August, and I'll speak to the tools that have been developed as part of the Ventura Shellfish Enterprise and part of an outreach effort to other commercial aquaculture practitioners. And I want them to evaluate those tools and the advantage of applying some of the new technologies that we've developed. And that's it for me, Chris. Thanks.
All right.
Well, I should add, Chris, there's no charge to the district for that, my participation or welcome.
Okay. Thank you, Ev. Jackie or Mike, anything? I'll just add, and it's the conversation was non-specific to the port, but I would like to kind of bring it back to the port. In some work I've been doing with the county, there's been lots of discussions about these public meetings and how they are going to be done into the future. And as you might imagine, with the new rules just being handed down, there's certainly nothing definitive yet, but there are quite a few discussions about how this is going to be done, and I would just ask staff if they could at some point, if it's possible the next meeting, fine, maybe the meeting after, if they could bring an item for us to discuss in open session with some, you know, options, a kind of discussion of what the rules are as they are and what maybe the logistics of things and how they can work, you know, so that we can move forward, right? Because it's going to change, and thankfully.
We just have to, I think, have an intelligent discussion about how best to do that.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you for that. Anything else under board communication? Okay. Staff and general manager reports.
Just a couple items I wanted to highlight. As always, in this meeting, you've got the full departmental staff reports from various departments, and I think all our folks are able to join us tonight. So if you have any questions on anything, certainly able to answer those. But the two I wanted to highlight is Harbor Patrol first. They've been working very closely and hosting the city fire department over the last several weeks here, right here in this conference room, in terms of classroom training and then out on the water doing joint exercises and working with the fire boat and so on. It's just a great opportunity that John Higgins has worked closely with the city's fire department to conduct building that relationship and working group between the two agencies. So it's a great mutual aid and a great opportunity. Secondly, I wanted to talk a little bit about our dredging activities. You know, no sooner have we finished up one round of dredging, we are working closely with our legislators on the next round of dredging. And wanted to, of course, give my kudos to Todd for coordinating. But we want to give some special thanks to our president has included us in the national presidential budget for next year, $3.37 million. We are looking at a work plan carryover from the Army Corps of Engineers at $1.47 million. Combined, that puts us right now at $4.84 million proposed. We'd like to get up to $5.8 million, would be a full budget, and that's what we're working towards. Congresswoman Brownlee has been very supportive. She's included proposals for that $5.8 million total budget. A little bit of new process this year. Both U.S. senators asked for specific letters of support from our local and regional officials with the community project funding method which projects are being looked at this year. And I do want to thank the city for their support with the Mayor Rubalcaba providing a letter to us, Supervisor and former Mayor Matt LeVere providing a letter of support for the Port District, as well as our State Assembly member Steve Bennett and our State Senator Monique LeHunt. So all of them have been very responsive and helpful in supporting the district's dredging goals and objectives, and just want to give them that support. So we go onwards from here, and we'll see if we can pick up another million along the way. That's what I have for you this evening, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair. If you have any questions for staff, again, I think we're here to answer those questions.
Okay. Any questions, commissioners?
I got a handful of questions. Jump in. So Brian, on the lobbyist report, there's page 31. There's a discussion about Treasury announces allocations for COVID recovery funds, and there was some links. I noted, following the links, I noticed Ventura County got $164 million. Ventura City appeared to get nothing, and I didn't see anything in there about special districts. Is there any more insight into our, I think we filed a request for some funding. Any more updates on that?
We did. I'd probably ask John to give an update on the status of that, but before he does that, I will share with the board that the governor's, I think it's the GoBiz office, has identified $250 million in funding for ports and harbors recovery from COVID. The application process has not yet begun, but we have been working closely with our CSDA, California Special Districts Association representative, to make sure that we're on that distribution list. We'll have to see what the requirements are and see if we're eligible to receive funding. But we do thank the governor's office for identifying a specific category of ports and harbors for a recovery fund. So we're going to pursue those. And I don't know, John, if you have any updates at all related to the FEMA request that we put in. I know it was a small dollar value relative to larger requests, but has there been any Any update on that to share?
No, it's still in a kind of a status hold. All our stuff is done on our side, and we elected to try to get the maximum revenue back, so it takes a little bit longer. But I just logged in right now, and no change, and in some ways that's a good thing.
Okay. One other source of potential, I had shared with the board and the public that the Ventura County Special District Association, which is a chapter of California, has advocated directly to the county of Ventura for potential funds for its special district, so broader than just ports and harbors. A request there, and we put together a matrix of cost impacts to each of the special districts throughout the county, and that information is with the county as well. So we're trying to look at all the different possibilities that could provide help. Nothing yet has landed, and again, the governor's announcement has not translated yet into a formal application to submit, but we will stay tuned.
Yeah, I'm glad you're paying attention to all that.
Yeah.
At least we've got to stay in the game, so
yeah,
that's good.
Absolutely.
That's good. So I had a second question, and it relates to John also. In this surrendered and abandoned vessel exchange, page 37, John, it sounds like you're putting in a lot of effort to get rid of this old vessel, and you mentioned potentially having to ground the vessel. That sounded like a pretty serious alternative. I guess my question is, you haven't been able to get any of the other harbors or the yards to accept this thing. Why not? Do we understand why not? Is it just they're so busy, they swamped with work? Or is disposal a losing business?
So this is a classic reason why this program was created, because agencies were having challenges in disposing of boats, especially wooden boats. In our situation, it is too big for one of the two boatyards in our harbor, and so the only one that can deal with it has been too busy. And I, on a weekly basis, I'm following up with them and trying to solicit them to begin work, or at least give me the confidence. The best I got from them was the bid. In Channel Islands Harbor, one of the two boatyards could handle it. This particular boat is larger than, you know, the average boat, and I just explored every option that was available. Grounding it, as I mentioned, was the worst case scenario, and obviously I would not elect to do that this time of year, but it's incredibly frustrating. The boat's taking on water. It's just something I can't push the boatyards any harder than I'm already doing, and I think the this has been a trend this whole past year. They run a clean business, and they work really hard to keep their business clean. And when you come in and destroy a boat, especially a boat to that size, it seriously disrupts their whole business for more than just the 2 days that the boat's in the yard. So, I'm doing everything I can and looking for any option.
Okay.
Thanks, John.
Yeah, wish I had some wisdom there, but certainly do not want to see that boat sink or end up on the beach. Yeah. My final comment was on, and we'll talk some more about this in the budget later, but on slide 51, I just thought it deserved a little special note that the percentage increase between April of last year and April of this year, charters, which near and dear to my heart, you know, those dive boats, 4,000% increase. We're back. Doesn't it feel good?
Thanks, Mike. Any other comments? The only thing I would add is, you know, these reports now that you've done that are so comprehensive and thorough, I hope the public and those reviewing our documents really get an appreciation for the amount of work that the district does. I mean, you can just see through this document the capital improvements, the maintenance, the harbor patrol activities. I mean, the marketing that we do. It's every time I read it, I'm just kind of amazed at the amount of work that gets done here. So, kudos to everybody for that.
Thank you to our staff.
Yeah, definitely.
And Chris, if I could echo that, it's very, very helpful for me to have me make what is usually invisible work very visible. And I think it's great. I know the amount of time it takes for staff to compile these reports, so each time I read one, I want to take time to acknowledge the time, energy, and effort that went into not just the work that they did, but creating the report itself. So extend a thanks to the staff for writing these reports and making them available to the commissioners and the public as a whole, in addition to the work that's done and documented in here. So well done.
All right. Thank you for that, Jackie. Okay, let's move on to our next item, legal counsel report. Counselor?
Sam has his hand up, or had his hand up.
We've already done public communications. Andy, go ahead and make your report.
Okay. All right. Well, kind of stole my thunder. I was going to report on the $250 million earmarked in the budget that was just adopted. And you also stole my thunder. I was going to talk about the governor's executive order he signed last Friday that extended the provisions relating, the emergency provisions relating to the Brown Act until September 30th. So we have 3 months to transition back to the way things used to be.
Very good. Okay, thank you.
That's it.
All right.
That's all I got.
Thank you for that, Andy. Okay, so now we'll move on to our consent agenda. We have a number of items on the consent calendar. I'm going to read them all, so bear with me. They're up there on the screen, but I think for the record, I'll want to read them into you. So we have approval of a new retail lease agreement with Gay Clanton and Tracy Lindquist, doing business as Ventura Swimwear. Item B is approval of a new retail lease agreement with Ventura County Potters Guild, doing business as Ventura Pottery Gallery. Item C is approval of new sublease with Catherine Sparks-Jones, doing business as Ventura Harbor Fisherman Storage. Item D is approval of a new restaurant lease agreement with John Gillian and Tom Conway, doing business as Deep Sea by Conway Family Wines. Item E is award of bid to JTech Corporation, Inc. for 1575 Spinnaker Drive Trash Enclosure Project. Item F is award of a bid to JTech Corporation for ADA access improvement projects with 6 additive alternatives. And finally, item G is approval of Portside Partners loan extension. These are items expected to be non-controversial and act upon at one time, but we do have a public comment request. So before I turn it over to the commissioners, I'll ask Sam, you had a comment on item D.
Yes, commissioners, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, I will say I'm very glad to see that property be getting moved forward, and I think Conway's is a nice group. But I would, and it was prior, I believe, to Brian's tenure. It was under Oscar's tenure. But I did note in the documents associated with it that the Port District states the lease has percentage rents associated with food and alcohol sales. And the Port District was notified by the state liquor authority that you can't do that. And I really, a one entity prior before, the lease wouldn't be approved by the state because of the fact that it stated that. And I would hope that the port is mindful of that and correcting of that, because it is, you can't collect monies on alcohol unless you have an actual liquor license to do so, and that leases eventually need to be changed. But the state is aware of that, and they're taking a look at it now.
Okay. All right.
That's my comment.
All right. Thank you for that, Sam. Before I ask staff to comment on that, I do want to add, we do have a comment submitted in writing, and I wanted to from John Conway, and I just want to read it into the record. reads as follows. To the Board of Port Commissioners, Conway Family Wines is thrilled to be joining the Ventura Harbor Village to open our family's deep sea wine tasting room and provide a unique wine tasting destination experience for visitors and locals alike. We look forward to working closely with the harbor community and are excited at the prospect of many successful years as tenants. Thank you for your consideration. We can't wait to begin. So I'll write that in, and now maybe I'll ask staff to comment on our public comment from Sam, if you have a response.
There's no issue as it relates to this lease in that matter.
Okay. All right. What is the pleasure of the commission on our consent calendar? Okay. A motion and a second, and I'll just mention, Ab, you're kind of cutting out again, but we did hear your motion, just for future reference. Any further discussion on that motion? Okay, could I have a roll call, please?
Commissioner Gardena?
Yes.
Commissioner Ashworth?
Yes.
Commissioner Blumenberg?
Yes.
Commissioner Stevens?
Yes.
Vote carries
4-0. Okay, very good. We'll move on to our standard agenda. Our item number one is consideration of adoption of ordinance number 55, authorizing execution of a new office lease agreement with options for Andrea's Seafood Specialties, doing business as Andrea's Seafood Restaurant. Seth?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chairman, Commissioners. I'm excited tonight to bring back the item. We had an opportunity to complete the publication process. Our clerk to the board made sure of that. And this is required to be back on standard agenda for your formal approval. But recall, this will provide a new office lease for Andrew Seafood that aligns with the restaurant lease that the board recently took action on. We're excited to bring this to you, to have it move forward, and for another up to 19 years and change worth of Andrea's office right alongside their restaurant. So that's our report, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for that. Any questions of staff? And if not, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll just one comment.
Okay.
It was had an impromptu neighborhood gathering recently, and I said, I polled my neighbors, when's the last time you've been to Ventura Harbor? And the comments I got were, oh, that place where Andreas is at? So that just reinforces Michael's, I am the anchor tenant, right? So I'm thrilled to make a motion that we approve this ordinance number 55. Oh, you got a comment? Sorry.
We had Michael, but he got to raise his hand. Do you want
to? Okay. I apologize for that. Before we do that, any other comments from commissioners before I ask for public comment? Okay, not seeing any. Anyone out there in the public wishing to comment on the item?
Michael, do you want to speak?
Not seeing anything? Okay, all right. Then close the public comment portion and bring it back to the commissioners.
So now I'll make my motion to adopt ordinance number 55.
Okay.
I'll second it.
All right. Okay, we have a motion and a second to, what are we doing here? We are waiving reading and directing the clerks to place the ordinance number 55 in the record and adopting ordinance number 55, authorizing the execution of the new lease with Andrea's Seafood Restaurant. Could I have a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Gardena?
Yes.
Commissioner Ashford?
Yes.
Commissioner Blumenberg?
Yes.
Commissioner Stevens?
Yes.
Vote carries 4-0.
Very good. Glad to have you for another extended period of time, Michael. Okay, let's move on to item two. It's approval of our fiscal year 2021-22 Harbor Village Leasing Strategy and Action Plan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This item is... Again, we've started to do this over the last few years, and this was specifically included in our five-year objectives to have both a leasing property management strategy action plan And the next item that you're going to hear is related to our marketing department. So two separate items. This one's leasing, and that one's then marketing. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Todd, who's going to give us a PowerPoint presentation.
All right. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, commissioners. Just going to do the next slide. So just a quick outline. We're going to obviously be talking, recapping basically the district goals and objectives, because that's what's driving the bus here. I want to spend a minute talking about how we see that the leasing strategy is instrumental in part of our support of the tenant success. Talking a little bit about where we're going, where we've been and where we're going, and then digging down and talking about the leasing goals. We've got our goals, we've got our objectives, we've got leasing goals, and then a bit of an overview and then some details on some of the items. Next slide. We see this all the time in our reports, but always these things are in the back of our minds when we're considering what our strategies and objectives and goals need to be. The long-term goal, obviously, economic vitality, something that we'll probably refine and revisit in the fall during our workshop, but it probably won't change considerably from this. It's about economic vitality, development, diversity, and effective leasing and marketing strategies that that bring that economic vitality to the harbor and all of the businesses. The leasing strategy is specific to the village, therefore this is one of the objectives is the Harbor Village, and to maintain and improve Harbor Village infrastructure and enhance the overall visitor experience. And we do that partly through leasing and the property management action plan. Next slide. You probably saw this in the report, so I don't want to read these slides to you.
Thank you.
But I think it's important to spend a minute just to talking about how we do see that part of the leasing role is supporting the tenant successes. What does that mean? That is providing when we have tenants who are seeking resources, seeking help. We have these connections to the business community, to the EDC, to the chamber. We help refer them. We help give them advice when they're stuck with a problem. We may go to members of the city or county when they get stuck with a permit and they don't know where to turn. We use the relationships that we've developed to help them out. We also give them information on financial support. A lot of the businesses are small, with 1, 2 to 10 people or owners. These people don't have time to find out what COVID program, this $5,000 here, go apply, here's the link. Providing that resource has been really important, and we hear a lot of tenant success stories in the last year about how they've benefited from these. We provide regular information about entitlement. I mentioned permitting already, the coordination. And then we also do a little bit with regard to advising, where to go to get business planning help. Eric Zacherson is a member of the EDC and has been part of our interview process for past tenants, including this most recent one. He's also a consultant for EDC, but also a private consultant. We've referred him to some of the businesses, and they've taken advantage of the services, either free or paid on their own nickel to try and do that. We also do retain an architect to help with the sign program and compliance with that at our cost. So we really try to help make sure that the tenants have, we're not just the landlord in the strip hall, we're trying to provide vehicles for success. Next slide. So where we've been, nobody needs to be reminded too much of COVID, we definitely saw the rental abatement and the permit program as part of the leasing strategy. One of the things that we discussed when we brought this to the board last year was a strong goal and objective of business retention. And I can say that we feel really good about how well that has worked out. No businesses left the harbor because they went bankrupt. And so that really is the success story for the vision of the board in executing the program, continuing to make it available until the end of this month. There's other elements to doing that. Staffing has been and continues to be a challenge. Retaining people when McDonald's is paying $17 an hour, Michael was telling me earlier, with benefits, that's a hard thing to compete for some of the businesses. So relaxing the minimum operating hours was very important for certain businesses who just simply couldn't live up to the expectation of 11 to 6, 7 days a week, 360 days a year. So We're getting back away from that now, but that was an important step for a lot of businesses to be vital. And then a couple of the restaurants, actually, you'll have seen, obviously, capitalizing on these kind of uses in their spaces. Next slide. Well, now we have to look at the future, and as I mentioned, you know, as of yesterday, June 15th, we're trying to get everybody back up to normal operating hours, whatever their lease might say, but generally, for a shopping mall, nobody benefits to come to a shopping mall with what are perceived as vacancies because the lights are off and the doors are closed. We really want to keep that vitality up, so we need to encourage business to get back to their regular operating hours and 7 days a week so that we have that sense of vibrancy at all times. That is what makes it attractive and makes us internet. We have a lot of temporary signage throughout the village, masks, come here, sound reports, all that stuff. We really need to get back to a bit more clean. We're so packed in the last few days. We don't want signage boards cluttering the walkways and the pathways, so we really need to get back to a more holistic, consistent with the design program. Again, working with the architect, that's something that we're going to be educating tenants as to how to get back on the same page with what's been approved by the city's DRC. Some of those expanded dining footprints are looking really successful. We've heard stories from some of the businesses that like, you know, big 5-6-figure improvements in revenue to the expanded footprints. Will they transition that all back now that they have 100% interior capacity? Maybe, maybe not. So the time is to either start moving away from that or to start moving entitlements so that we don't end up in a period where it's no longer allowed, but it's also not entitled to be there. So we need to work with tenants who want to expand their footprint to find something that's going to last.
And when when you say entitlement, so there, we need a city permit for that?
Okay. So we're going to build a patio with an awning or something permanent, ABC, maybe.
Coastal development.
Right, okay.
So, yeah. Yes. And then lastly, as the program ends, we're going to have to manage tenants and work with them. 40% as of December 31st is the program that can sneak up on somebody when they're not paying attention. So we're really going to have to work with them. And then, you know, whatever is left, you know, up to 60% divided over the following 6 months of repayment. So obviously that's managing our cash flow. Next slide. So we have 6 goals for the coming year. The first one is to maintain our high rate of retention of the successful businesses. I think it's fantastic. Well, I'm going to actually just read these, and then we'll go on, because each of these I go into detail on. Attract new and innovative tenants to continue the concept of destination experience. Achieve the marketing lease rates consistent with city and our regional averages. Continue to standardize our leases and lease provisions. Implement new city-approved Metro Harbor Village master sign program. And then secure a lease or leases for 1567 Spitnet for 100. That's the Lighthouse Building. Next slide. Again, don't want to batter you with the details. You probably have all read this. But really, it's a focus on continued leasing retention. We're at 100% occupancy in the village. What else is there to say?
Yeah.
So we need to retain businesses. We do need to make sure that we continue to focus on success as a destination. We need to balance, obviously, the need for rental rates commensurate with the growing CPI. For those who don't know, it was 3.6 2 months ago, it's 3.9 last month. CPI is astronomical, like it's going to be an astronomical this year. There's going to be some big number changes. That's going to affect our leasing rate and what we can charge, but also we have to be respectful of the tenants around as well. Be smart. We need to focus on continuing longer-term tenancies, particularly for businesses that are really successful. We've done that with Andrea's. You approved a couple of leases tonight that are longer term as well. 9 years, 5+4. Those are great. Those are really moving the needles for the successful businesses and keeping them going. We thought it was important to start focusing a little bit more on metrics. You've seen some of the stuff that we're doing and getting very detailed with oriented with our metrics. Our retail average sales per square foot is $235. And that's a 4-year average. So even though one would think last year was not, you know, not going to be within that, it's actually very consistent. Last year did not really move the needle on that. And the same thing with restaurants. The average did not wiggle more than maybe 5-6%. So the four-year average is pretty, you know, it's pretty telling. So those are things that we need to be considering as we, you know, prosecute longer leases. We want to encourage these ones that are really moving the needle and moving that trend upward. That obviously contributes to our success. And then a lot of the leases that you've approved this year include some sort of modernization expectation of our tenants, be that new signage, be that new interior amenities. There's something, it's not just the district contributing, we're looking for tenant contribution. We want the same modernization we've including in our master leases. We're looking for modernization of the suites. Keep things fresh, keep things vibrant, keep things attractive to visitors. Next slide. Goal number two is new tenants. Obviously, we need to focus less on this in the short term, but this is going to change in the long term. Obviously, we need to update our leasing packets. One of the changes that we're implementing is working more specifically and with more direction with leasing agents. We want to develop policies for how to work and engage with agents and agencies, and we want to develop open leasing relationships with leasing brokers. We want them to work with us and for us to bring us opportunities, not just a one-way street and not just relying on our small district to try and attract the best opportunities that are out there. Leasing evaluations, you know, we want to continue to refine the prospecting element and the evaluation. I think we saw in the one that we just approved tonight, a very mindful and thoughtful process that used outside collaborators to provide input. And I think gave a lot of direction to staff and to the board as to, you know, these are the right kinds of things to consider in making a decision. I think that was really helpful. I think we want to continue to develop that. And then lastly, leasing updates. That's the same thing we see in the staff reports every time. Obviously open to any additional information you need, but we're already doing that. Next slide. Again, I'm not going to read this one to you. We need to advertise. There's a lot of synergy with the marketing department to make this happen. They take the promotional photos. They're the ones that create this vibrancy around what we're doing. We need to track that. Go to the next slide. Market lease rates. We are, as a part of our service with CoStar, we are very aware of our placement with the rates we're asking compared to the region. We also have our own internal databases. So we have a very good idea of the rates that we're charging and understand where they're at. And in negotiating with NPS, we asked pushback, or they didn't necessarily believe that our rates were commensurate. We were able to demonstrate that our value was right in the right place in the marketplace and got them to pay the rate that we asked. That's having that information and data available to do that. And that's all of the information here. And we use that also to advertise and to create demand. So this is a great place to bring your business. Standardized leases, there's not much to say other than we continue to move this one forward. Next slide. This is a big one, the Ventura Harbor Village Master Sign Program. I have a bunch of documents to review tonight or tomorrow to finish the solicitation. We should anticipate publishing that tomorrow. And we'll have a site walk, I think, the last week of June. The bids will be opened in early July, and we anticipate construction before summer's done. This is a look of what it will be. The only difference is that rectangular base is actually being swapped out for the circular base that is like in the club courtyard with the little seashells in the outside. So we're going to modify the base to be more consistent with that look. Round seems to be the prevalent dynamic in our decorations in the harbor. And last slide. And then lastly is to execute the construction for the City DRC approved building renovations for the lighthouse building. And then upon completion of that, or prior to, secure leases for those spaces. That is my presentation.
Mr. Chairman, back to you.
No, thank you for that, Todd. Very, very thorough. Commissioners, any
before I ask for public comment, any questions of Todd or Brian at this point?
Nobody's waiting.
Okay. All right. Go ahead, Mike.
What's the status of the lease right now for building 100?
For number 100?
Yeah.
That's on a month-to-month. The existing tenancy?
Yes.
Month-to-month.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Okay. Not seeing any other questions from commissioners, I'll open up the public comment portion of this. Is there anyone from the public wishing to comment on this item? Raise your hand on Zoom or star 9. Okay, not seeing any, we'll close the public comment portion. I'll bring it back to the commissioners for further questions, comments, or action. Jackie?
Just a quick question. I appreciate the standardization piece. That was something that came up in the public meeting. And I'm wondering at a future meeting if we could have a sense of what those standard pieces are as we look at the leases to understand the pieces that are that we're trying to make standard across all leases. That would be helpful for me.
Very good. Thanks, Jackie. Good suggestion. Anyone else? Ev?
Yeah, thanks very much, Todd. I thought it was a good presentation. As we move forward and we look at the metrics that you're going to be developing and using, I'd be interested to see how we can refine our working with other leasing agents, as you suggest, is one of your tactics. I think that's a helpful goal to look at. Sometimes hear stories from other people, but those relationships, I think, will be very beneficial, and they look to the professionalism of the ability to then pair those off with candidates like we saw recently with our line chasing it. I think that you see that reach. It's sort of not what you know, it's who you know, and those relationships are really very beneficial. We start honing in on a few, and I think those will be good. So I appreciate that very much.
All right. Thanks, Ev. All right. Anything else, commissioners?
I guess I wanted to foot stomp the Economic Development Council Commission.
Collaborative. County, EDCVC.
Yeah, I think that idea of bringing them in to help get a broader evaluation of prospective tenants, I think that was a great move. Just gave me, and I assume the rest of the commission, just more confidence that we really did a good scrub of prospective tenants. So I think that was a really
a
good addition. A little hard to hear what Jackie said also, but I think on the standardization, I think I agreed with her comment of let's get a more specific list of what kind of things you want to standardize. I think that was the intent of her comment. I lost it. That's good.
Okay. I don't have any comments to add. I just great report. I think we're obviously on the right track, right? I mean, 100% is pretty undeniable, right? That's and I look forward to seeing as we talked about the 100 building, right? You know where we go from there. That's kind of the maybe once you're at 100% where we are today. That's the next place to turn our attention. So I think you've rightly done that. So what's the pleasure of the commission?
Chris, you reminded me of what my last comment was.
Okay.
It was about building 100, and what we say up here is execute construction. Will we revisit that before we authorize construction?
Well, two things. One is that the design was approved by the board and approved by the city.
Yeah.
In terms of the design.
Yeah.
The cost is part of the five-year CIP, is in the CIP that we'll be talking about later tonight.
Yeah.
And then, of course, tenanting, leasing, all those things are board-driven and approved. So if there's something specific, because I tried to break it into pieces, right? So there's different parts.
The construction contract will
come back. That's the other part, right? This would go out for bid, and this would be back to the board for approval.
So my one nagging concern about the construction of that space, because that is one of the last remaining large spaces in the village. And by subdividing it, we lose one large, you know, and so we, how confident are we that we'll do better marketing smaller spaces than one large space? I just hate to see that that go away. That's why I say, are we going to talk about that some more? Are we really sure it's time to subdivide and give up that large space? That's my nagging concern.
Okay. Yeah, commissioners, what? Anybody prepared to make a motion in a second?
Just I'll move that the adoption of the leasing plan is presented.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second that the board approve the fiscal 2021-2022 Harbor Village Leasing Strategy and Action Plan. Can I have a roll call vote?
Commissioner Gardina?
Yes.
Commissioner Ashford?
Yes.
Commissioner Blumenberg?
Yes.
And Commissioner Stevens?
Yes.
Vote carries 4-0.
Very good. We'll move now to item 3, approval of the fiscal year 2021-22 Ventura Harbor Village Recovery and Visitation Plan.
All right. Well, here's the companion piece tonight. And again, same thing, part of the 5-year objectives for the village, specifically objective B as in Victor. And tonight, Jennifer Tall-London and Ruby Emery are going to provide a presentation to the board and to the public. So with that, I will turn it to Jennifer to kick it off.
You're muted.
Muted, Jennifer.
There you go. Sorry about that. There we are. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Chairman. Good evening, Chairman Stevens, Vice Chair, and Commissioners. It's a pleasure to be with you today to share the proposed recovery and visitation plan for our Ventura Harbor Village as it pertains to the board's 5-year objective for the Ventura Harbor Village and the long-term goal of increased economic vitality. We are especially optimistic today about presenting this the day after the reopening. We are excited to see the numbers in the Harbor Village, as Todd mentioned, over the last just 2 days, it's exploded. And we look forward with the excitement for our community and our visitors and our harbor businesses ahead. As per the direction of the general manager, our plan will be twofold. It'll focus on recovery and consumer confidence messaging, and then re-welcoming larger crowds and activities back to the village. Next slide, please. Thanks. Okay, the process on the road to get here, actually, we wanted to share with you the research, feedback, and data collection that was done. So we collected this from our village stakeholders and customers, reviewed analytics and performance metrics monthly, which you see some of that in our board reports every month, as well as numerous consumer and travel insights to develop a roadmap for a compelling and fluid plan moving into the post-pandemic landscape. I really want to take this time to thank our Harbor Village businesses and the community for sharing their valuable information and feedback for this project. Next slide. Carolyn Batetta in May posted this in one of her newsletters, and I thought it was really important. It says, communicating consistently and clearly with residents and visitors and the most effective way to manage expectations and is the most effective way to manage expectations and preserve the California experience. And as Visit California, you might be aware, was halted in all their marketing programs for a long period of time this past year. I want to applaud the board and the general manager for continuing to see the value in staying relevant, inviting, and accessible this past year. Next slide, please. And the good news story here is that VPD continually marketed the Ventura Harbor Village as open and available to guests when they were ready, or to share and support businesses who were open, that became open during the time period of last year, and then also we supported those businesses that you can visit virtually to keep top of mind. And we learned that this is such an important aspect that we're actually going to keep that going as an evergreen piece to virtually connect. In fact, we increased areas including local marketing, e-newsletters to weekly, added more funding to social media and online advertising, created a large amount of video and photo content, adapted, as you may recall, to socially distancing to keep all our holiday events at the village for an experience for both customers online and in person and more. Next slide. So some of the key messaging this past year, you can see those here. You've seen them in our marketing reports throughout the year that we presented. These are just some of them, but these were really the ones that were driven by pandemic protocols and guidelines. Next. And so what we want to share today is just take a quick review of one of the first of more than a dozen videos we produced and launched in this past year. And this came out in 2020, that Ventura Harbor Village was open and ready to receive visitors safely as an oceanfront attraction. Go for it.
Is there volume, Jennifer?
Is there a volume?
Yeah, like is there sound? Is there music or sound for the videos?
Yes, it's a video. It should run.
Is there sound with the video?
There's a play button.
Yes.
Oh, I know, but I'm trying to turn the sound on.
Yeah, good idea. I'm sure we can hear it.
Not fair, though.
Well, the sound goes in and out there, but you hopefully you've seen that before. We've run it consistently, and it just ran again on a social media page all of May. So we're very excited about that. Ruby Emery, our marketing and events coordinator, is going to share with you the input from our village stakeholders. Ruby?
Thanks, Jennifer, and good evening, commissioners. Can you guys hear me okay?
Sure can.
Awesome. So I'll just jump right into it. An instrumental component of devising this plan was collecting and evaluating feedback from our village tenants. So the following slides are going to be a sampling of the data that we received from the 23 businesses who chose to participate. So as you can see on the left, the top markets village businesses are interested in are predominantly Ventura County residents, as well as south of Ventura moving into Los Angeles. So this data is consistent across the board with our visitor survey feedback, as well as demographics we pulled from our social platforms. And then on the right, the chart there shows the top age group that village tenants feel are key for their businesses are millennials. Next slide, please. When asked about enhancing the visitor experience, village tenants prioritize live music and entertainment, followed by photo opportunities or Instagrammable spaces. Ranking third there are the welcoming banners along Spinnaker Drive. However, it's important to know all of these options listed had really strong interest, so we do plan to implement each one moving ahead for this next fiscal year. Next slide, please. Another key piece of data we found very interesting was that 100% of village businesses are on board to cross-promote Visit California's new recovery campaigns. Visit California, as you know, is the marketing arm for the state, and their marketing budget exceeds $77 million. And they're also expecting an additional $95 million in marketing dollars from Governor Newsom as stimulus funding. That was proposed in the state budget. So we're excited that all of our tenants are on board to leverage the incredible reach that Visit California will have in this next fiscal year.
Thank you, Ruby.
Thank you.
And also part of our collection of data, of course, is our visitor perspective. So our plan is inclusive of information from 2020, though, as you might note from the board packet, that we provided by both village tenants and visitors, because we collected all this incredible data. If you remember, last March and April, like right before the pandemic came, and we feel like it's still really relevant as we reopen. So with this year, we'll be looking at data collected in 2020, and then also with such a positive outlook on the horizon, we designed this 2021 online survey to target key California travelers. So this is what we're looking at now. So far, you can see the responses of June 1st. We had over 2,500 public responses. And to date, we looked this morning, and we have over 3,000 people who have responded. So that's very exciting for us. And we'll continue to look at that data. And this offered potential visitors also a chance to win a safe seaside package at Ventura Harbor this summer. So these graphs here kind of showcase the demographic and traveler behaviors that were in this 2,500 respondents. So with a large interest in the village, and you can see that the age bracket here is skewing more in the 40-plus market. And then to the right, we just really wanted to gauge about family travel and also what travel behavior is like for people that are interested in our destination. And you can see here that almost 50% do travel with kids or a multi-generational component, and then 50% travel as couples or solo or adults only. Next slide. This is a great example of where we're seeing the respondents of our survey. So from the dark blue being the most prevalent respondees in the survey and down towards light blue. But we're very excited to see this kind of interest in our survey as well, and it covers about 350 miles data collection. Next slide. The data is reporting that while taking this survey, over 80% were in the midst of planning a trip to the coast or the beach this summer. So that was exciting, really exciting news for us, and you'll see some more supportive data on that as well. And then to the right, Q7, when asked what activities do you look forward to participating in, we really wanted to see where their interests lied. It really was focused on patio dining, wildlife viewing, beach visits, live music, outdoor shopping centers, visits to national parks, and more. So really, again, you can see that there's kind of a theme going on here with outdoor experiences. Next slide. And then we did ask this question as well, which options below would inspire you to visit Ventura Harbor and Ventura Harbor Village in the near future? We didn't want to assume that everybody has been here before, so we wanted to gauge where their interests lie. And again, you can see the top areas include waterside dining, culinary experiences, outdoor walkable spaces, we'll be introducing something new on that, wildlife viewing and whale watching, beaches at the harbor, national parks is very high on the list, one-of-a-kind stores. So this is really good information and data for us to plan ahead. Next slide. So these are those fun clouds. You saw this in our last year plan. I want to bring it back because, as you can see, we really didn't quite understand how long and in-depth the pandemic was going to be for us. So we were able to utilize some of these words, but we're going to be bringing back a lot of these keywords because we asked our visitors on site right before the pandemic to describe the harbor and how it makes them feel, and these were the keywords they used. Next slide. And then this year in our public survey, we went a little bit different direction, and we said, what words would you use to describe a waterfront vacation or a visit to the coast? And you can see here, these are some of the keywords. Now, with over 3,000 respondents, there's a lot of words to review, but there is some overlap there, so it's really interesting. We'll take those, and we'll really use it towards our brand messaging. Next slide, please. This is a great slide. I like this slide because it really shows the demand drivers for 2021. So based on our survey results so far of those 25 respondents, you'll see that patio dining is up as a key demand driver at 75% of interest. Time at the beach, live music and entertainment is high because we all haven't seen it for so long, so we're excited to bring it back. Visiting a national or state park, we're seeing that across the nation, huge uptick in that interest. Of course, family fun, open-air shopping, on-the-water activities, indoor dining. So we just kind of laid it out here. All have strong interest, of course. Next slide. And along with this, we decided we just started developing these in June. These are for our social media channels. Again, it's a video. Hopefully the sound will go. But this is a feature that will be on our social media channel, and this one's focused on dine. Let's take a look. So those are, again, it's a little bit smoother with sound. Sorry about that. But we're making one for dine, shop, play, stay, explore on our social media channels so that we can really highlight all our amenities there. Travel recovery data is important, and I tell you, there's a lot of it. We have been, since the onset of the pandemic, our team has been engaged in conversation on consumer and travel sentiment, marketing trends, and customer interest via the tourism industry and research studies. Although there are several more points in the board packet, I just wanted to share three tonight on the slide. During a Central Coast meeting recently, our consultant reported that they had just done a study of travelers. And where are you going on your next trip? Beach destination ranked highest at 38%, with urban destinations like Ventura ranked third. So those are the key interests right now. NPR Radio had a travel expert panel on about 2 weeks ago, and they all reported that the search engines are skewing 40% higher this year for beach travel and outdoor destinations. So we are set right in there. And then Visit California saw a big shift in key drivers for travelers in California as of May 2021. And this picture here in the slide really, I think, showcases that. Liberation, excitement, live in the moment, and you only live once experiences. So we'll be trying to emulate those as well. Next slide. An important daily task of the Harbor Marketing team is to share the Ventura Harbor story and the Ventura Port District mission via a number of variety outlets. So the team continues to increase brand awareness, highlighting and sharing these harbor amenities and businesses. New in the next month that I did want to highlight is we're really excited about redesign of the VenturaHarbor.com, working with Jessica, the clerk of the board, that will share important information on the port as well as serve as a platform for referrals and information for our harbor businesses. Also new, the team is working with the city to see about reinstating, and some of you could probably remember these, they were here when I came, the welcoming banners that were on the city medians and Spinnaker and Schooner Drive. And so we're looking to work with them to help fund that project. A new walkable harbor itinerary with photography and video are currently in development stages, and we're just very excited, again, with the advent of the new opening of that large port-side promenade. This has really expanded that opportunity to talk about the entire walkable harbor, and we created a really fun itinerary around that. So these are just some examples, but, of course, we continue to highlight all these aspects of our harbor. Next slide.
All right, I'm going to jump back in to give you guys an overview of the first of our four main strategies. This one is our visitor experience. So this strategy is ultimately going to be about engaging the senses. So what our visitors hear, see, feel while they're on site is so crucial to how long they are staying in the harbor, how much they spend, and how frequently they choose to return. So our goals, shown in these bubbles here, are ultimately to create raving fans through entertainment, through our seaside ambiance, through our amazing amenities, and of course, our events. Next slide, please. So we have all of our events laid out for you here. Every single event that you see on this page, aside from the Art and Street Painting Festival, are Ventura Port District produced events. So our small team creates these signature experiences and plan extensive campaigns around them, as you know. This year, our events had to definitely be reimagined. However, we still did everything in our power to still make it magical. And if you head to this next slide here, we have an example of one of those campaigns that we ran during the holidays. So next slide. Hopefully the audio works.
Thank you. That was a really fun campaign. It actually turned out to be, I think, staff favorite because the storyline was so much fun there. A second strategy on our list of the plan is the paid media strategy. And these strategies are reflective in what you see in our monthly board reports as well. So the media landscape has seen even a greater growth in social and email and virtual experiences realm during the pandemic year. But it's also still reported that consumers view a variety of platforms and media before making their decision on how they're going to spend their time and where they're going to go. So our paid media strategy will continue to focus on the outdoor attraction messaging and open to seaside safely, aimed at the local community and those searching for new places and experiences to visit. So, you know, through our regional reach and local advertising and tenant offerings. And I believe it says, you know, campaign. If we move to the next slide, please. This showcases the over 22 seasonal campaigns that we do throughout the year. And our seasonal campaigns are supported via paid media with the purpose to drive, elevate, and inspire frequent and return visits to the Ventura Harbor Village using a multimedia and experiential approach. So not only are there holidays included in here, but there are signature campaigns that we've created working with some of our tenants. You know, one of those, Meet the Makers is one of those that we did this last year too, and many others. Mermaid Month, for instance. Next slide.
So a big part of promoting these campaigns that Jennifer just reviewed is having professional visuals. In our office, we're frequently using the slogan, content is king. So we're constantly seeking quality photos and videos to keep our destination top of mind. They also keep us relevant in the digital world, and they help us to find new ways to tell the Ventura Harbor story through visual mediums. So social media has been a huge catalyst to help us do this. We reached over 16 million people over the course of the last fiscal year. That's up from 11 million the previous year, so up 5 million people in just 1 year by reintroducing new content. But it's important to note that it's not just social where this content is crucial. We use it in almost every facet of our marketing. So we use these visuals and videos to refresh our website, to populate our event calendars, to create banners, newsletters, design ads, etc. So if we go to the next slide, we have an example of a fun, high-energy piece of content that focuses on the outdoors. We produced this last year, but we'll continue to push out similar content in the year ahead.
Thank you. This is a really fun one we're using now and seeing a good response to that because it really emulates summer. It makes me so excited. And I want to say thank you to all our village tenants that help us to film on their locations, too. We really appreciate it. So that brings us to earned media and tourism strategy. It plays an essential role in our economic vitality, not only the Ventura Harbor Village, the businesses there, and also our visitation to Channel Islands via our part concessionaire Island Packers. Although, as reported by Visit California, the state does have some catching up to do. Again, they were on pause for a very long time, but they have reported that more Californians than ever are going to be planning a local road trip this year. So as tourism recovers, continue, Ventura Harbor waterfront stays and Trisp Island Packers will remain a focus here. We've also seen an influx now of more and more media and influencers who are reaching out to us to create new content. And again, third-party content is still a way that we're all, I'm sure, looking to see where to go and what to do. Next slide. So we're excited to promote this summer. Here's what's kind of coming up. Our Seaside brand embraces the optimistic spirit of summer. So some highlights are we're kicking off a Happiness Comes in Waves campaign. We are focused on new video and photo content on site to reflect our unique village experiences. And then starting this Friday, we have a new afternoon DJ session, which launches to target that millennial market on the promenade. And then we'll be installing creative photo ops throughout this summer for road trip and sharing travels that people can share that they're at the village during their road trips. Next slide. A look ahead, we'll continue to monitor, of course, and collect info and input, feedback, and consumer sentiment. With the current strategy to stay very fluid and flexible, we found that to be just completely what we had to do almost meet weekly with ourselves and our team and Brian to just see what we needed to talk about next and what was important. So we know that that's an important thing we need to do. But on for discussion and in our messaging will be alfresco and patio dining, outdoor activities, open air shopping, on the water fun, pamper seaside, relaxation, time with fans and friends and family to make memories. We're going to bring back that discussion on sustainable practices and seaside placemaking, and of course, holidays at the harbor will be a focus in the next few months. And I just want to say thank you. We look forward to, and with enthusiasm, to the year ahead. I'd like to thank our wonderful team, village businesses, and our marketing partners who continue to make this such a premier Ventura Harbor seaside experience. So, thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer.
I'm happy to answer any questions.
I do as well want to thank Jennifer and Ruby and Susan for all their efforts here. It's been a very challenging year to not only program, but to message, and they've certainly helped me a lot with getting information about COVID out, not only to our tenants, but as it relates to some of the impacts there, but for visitors alike. So I think enthusiasm, I think, is the right point for the right term for the year ahead, and I think you can sense that from the team here today. So with that, we'll turn it back to you.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Thanks to you all. Commissioners, any questions for Jennifer and Ruby or staff? Comments? Jackie?
First I just want to thank you for not just this report, but the other ones. I recognize why I'm always drawn to your reports. You wrote in this one that people are more likely to read a report with visuals in it. And so I'm always attracted to your report, I think, for that reason now. Really appreciate how data-driven you are in your approach, and I really appreciate both the consumer side but also the tenant side in terms of the feedback. So I want to commend you for that. What do you see as kind of a goal that you have in terms of metrics and visitation or other things? How would you measure for your team, not just impressions, but kind of the success of bringing people to the harbor? Do you have a sense of that?
Absolutely. Great question, Jackie. And I also just want to mention, too, that you mentioned a while back that you were going to be interested to see what we learned from the pandemic. Do you remember that statement? And so our team met and discussed that when we were designing this plan. What did we learn from each one of these aspects? And how can we take what we've learned? And I think you guys, throughout the year, the tenants, the visitors, and yourself will notice there will be some replications of things that we have learned that we can do better, that we can do more efficiently, or that we just redesigned differently and actually ended up loving, and we got good response from the visitors. So we're excited to bring that forward as well. And then to your point in regards to goals for like success points, and at the Harbor Village, we don't have a parking system yet. We don't have a per se, a ticketed system. Todd has reintroduced the pedestrian counter, correct, Todd? So we are very excited to start seeing some results from that, because as you recall, we had that for a number of years just to see our visitation numbers and be able to see if what we're doing or activities that we promoted or events we're able to bring in the data that way. And then thirdly, we also always look at our revenue numbers that the reports from the village. We constantly look at those, review them, see where we need to focus. Is there a pattern here? Do we see a relevancy between what we're doing and, how the dollars are being spent at the harbor? We used to have a visitor on-site booth, and we will be reintroducing that again so we can get that touch point data with the visitor themselves. We weren't able to do that, obviously, this last 12 months. But we will be hopefully looking to reinstate those, so we'll have a better understanding of the visitor who's actually on the site. Those are some key ways right now, particularly, like you said, the metrics of it all. We're constantly looking at what was the number one post this month and why, and, what are the trends that are going forward. So we're constantly always looking at data to make those decisions. But in terms of just, the on-site, is I think what you were referring to, correct?
Right, right. How are you measuring success in terms of bringing people here?
Yes. Those are our key ways so far. Again, we equate success to the tenants are doing well and revenues are up, and that we're seeing the visitation numbers continue to rise. So I think having this pedestrian counter back in will be hugely helpful for us as well. I hope I answered your question, but.
Okay. All right. Any other questions, Ev?
I think Jackie is always spot on and thoughtful with her comments. I echo what she said. In my tenure on the board, this is the best marketing presentation that I've seen. I thought it draw heavily from comments I know that you've received from really a 360 review. You know, the tenants, experts in the field, and also the people from the legal. Well, I think you're so clever to use this media as a means of continuing to tell the same story. Your comments that you have made throughout the report which we read really show the consistency and clarity of thinking, which I really would compliment you. Really, this is your baby, and you've done such a good job maturing it, curating it, and presenting it. It shows that a cumulative effort of years of your loving and hard work, I'm reminded when I show up early to drop something off, you're there. And when I come by late to pick something back up again, you're there. And the two things you control in life are attitude and effort. And in my view, you've done nothing but the best for us in devoting yourself. And I have one little, we've talked in the past, and I know we can mention anything, but if you're ever looking for an event, I always love opening the bar. And I mean, to some extent, we're always open, but there's a lot of arteries that have opening day celebrations, which are always fun to have people come down. And I know that there's a lot of people who could support that among the tenants, among the master leases, and among the places that are coming to. So, again, it's just to me, really, you're the one worth it.
Thank you, Ev. And I wanted to mention that, following Todd's very successful leasing program and 100% occupancy, that's been just such an amazing feat, and I congratulate him and the team there. I mean, that really is what we're talking about. All these amazing businesses in the Harbor Village help to make this job, easier and fun, and all the different amenities that we have. It really is a testament to our great Harbor Village businesses and our team overall.
Did you have any,
Mike? A couple of quick comments and then a question. Echo Jackie's comment about the data. I think that's really important that we're collecting real data, just validating what we think we know with what does the data show. I liked one of the conclusions I heard that we got to keep marketing the locals. Reminds me of the neighbors again. That place with Andrea is, right? We got to convince these people to get in the car and drive down. It's not far away, but we got to remind them what's here, and I think you're on that track, certainly. On slide 104, you have a SWOT, strength, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. That's
correct.
That's something that I do a lot in my business, and I would encourage us to revisit that, right? Let's talk about that some more. Not tonight, but let's talk about that some more in future meetings. I think that's important to look at that and assess it, and how can we improve. The one question I have is on page 97. There's a specific statistic cited, 28.8% increase in your budget from previous year, but there's a caveat in that there was a major line item moved in. I'm curious, if we took that line item out, what's the budget increase this year?
Brian, would you like to answer that, or do you like me to?
I almost want to defer it to the next item.
Okay, that is fair. When we go to the budget, that's fair.
But we're happy
because it'll jump out.
Happy to jump into that, and that would give Gloria a minute and Jennifer to help take a look.
But yeah, okay.
That might be the right place.
That's
to
good.
Do that.
So then my final.
I'll tell you what the item is, though.
I do have an answer to that.
Oh, hold on a second. Holiday decor budget, which used to be under maintenance, and the board supported and approved. We dramatically increased the budget surrounding decor. We've hired an events management company to do the installation, and takedown, and it really has become a marketing department-driven expenditure. And so from my perspective, I want the money where it's being managed and spent, and it's no longer a facilities activity.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah, makes sense to me.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Well, Brian did give us the task of staying within the budget from last year. He asked us to create a vision plan and recovery plan that was consistent with last year's numbers. As you mentioned, and I don't want to take anything from Gloria, you'll see, too, that, you know, like Brian just stated, there are some movements of particular line items. And then we just had a couple of increases of doing business, you know, items that were, you know, are part of doing business. So there was a small increase, but we tried to stay very consistent with where we were last year.
Last comment, Jennifer, it's not fair to show me videos of good food when Brian doesn't feed us anymore.
I know that dying one actually had me very hungry because it just is so amazing when you do, when you go around to do these videos, it's extremely hard if you go hungry. So it's all our wonderful product that is offered by our amazing restaurateurs.
All right. Anything else? I'll just add one comment, and kind of is a minor issue, but you know, your response rate from visitors, you know, getting now 3,000 responses. I mean, that's I don't know that people would realize that, but getting survey responses is a difficult business, and I applaud you for being able to get 3,000 responses and to continue to do that. It's obviously very valuable information, and whatever you're doing, keep doing it, because that's a really great response.
Thank you. Well, people are anxious to get back out there. They really like the seaside package that came with it. It was over a $600 value that you can win. But I think that what we learned from this already, going back to Jackie's point, what do you learn each time? We already talked about maybe incorporating this quarterly so that we have something that we can learn from our visitors. As we know, sentiments will change, you know, behaviors will change as we move forward each quarter, but we might do something like this just to gauge that and offer as well to increase our visitation and help tourism recovery in our hoteliers.
Yeah, and anyone who's ever done surveys before knows $600 is awfully cheap for that kind of, that level of data, I'll tell you that. So well done. All right.
Thank you.
Just a data point, 9,500 cars entered the harbor yesterday.
Wow.
That's right, we have car counts, too. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Follow-up question, where did they park?
If that were to hold true for a year, and that's a Tuesday, that would be 170% increase over.
That's a Tuesday.
Wow.
That's a. Thank you, Todd. And we're so excited to start reviewing that data. So I believe Todd will start reviewing it more regularly, you know, monthly, correct?
Yeah, I'm working on SkyFi to standardize a report that you and I would both have.
Okay.
But it's got a lot of data. 27,000 people went down to Sea Dock to Just for Dreamers.
Wow.
Wow, terrific.
That's the kind of data we're getting.
Yeah, beautiful. Excellent. Okay, back to the commissioners. What's your pleasure?
So I'll make the motion to approve the 2021-2022 Ventura Harbor Village Recovery and Visitation Plan.
Bruce, are there any comments from the public?
Public comment?
Thank you.
Was that the last item that I asked for comments and there weren't any? I thought I did it... All right. Okay. Let's hold off on it. Well, we can do it after the motion. Do we have a second on the motion? We can do it while the motion's on the floor.
Second.
Okay. All right. So we have a motion and a second to move the recommended action. But before we do that, is there anyone from the public wishing to comment on this item? Okay. If there aren't any, we'll close the public comment, and I'll ask the poor clerk to call the roll.
Commissioner Gardena.
Yes.
Commissioner Ashford?
Yes.
Commissioner Bloomberg?
Yes.
And Commissioner Stevens?
Yes.
Vote carries 4-0.
All right. We'll move on to item 4, adoption of resolution.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jennifer and Ruby. Great work.
Thank you. Thank you to my team and everyone and all our partners. Thank you.
All right. We'll move on to item 4, adoption of resolution number 3417 and 3418, approving the fiscal 21-22 preliminary budget, 5-year capital improvement plan, and salary schedule for non-represented employees.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think Jessica is going to be pulling up a PowerPoint presentation that's a follow-up to our budget study session from, I think, 4 weeks ago.
Okay. No dashed lines, right?
You know, spoiler, we don't want, you know, we've got some surprises in there for you.
Surprises in the report.
All right, very good.
So here we go. All right, thank you. All right, just go ahead and jump to the next one. So we've got a couple of recommendations that are included in the presentation. Adopting Resolution 3417, which would approve the 21-22 budget and 5-year CIP plan. And then 3418, approving 21-22 salary schedule for non-represented employees. The only digit that changed here on this chart from our budget study session is the FY 21-22 that merits 4 asterisks, which is based on our preliminary forecast. This number did move up. I would like to have Gloria start off with some information about these revenues and expenditures, and from there, we do have with us this evening Mary Beth Redding, and I will introduce her second.
Okay.
Good evening, commissioners.
Well, Gloria, good to see you.
This chart reflects this right in the same, the year-over-year change in operating revenues. The operating revenues in the preliminary budget for 21-22 is $9.344 million. This reflects a 10% increase over the 2021 mid-year budget revenue of $8.492 million. However, if you compare this preliminary budget revenue with the estimated actual revenue that we're anticipating this year, it's only a 3% increase over the approved amount. So, revenues this year are doing
well. We are doing better than we thought.
Yes, we're doing much better than we anticipated. The current year revenues are going to exceed the mid-year budget expectations in most of the categories.
And Gloria, that's for the period ending June 30, right?
That is.
So when we say year, we're not talking about December 31st. We're talking about June 30, so you're 11-plus months into the fiscal year.
Correct. They're just getting ready to post the May percentage sales. So we're just collecting all the May data for the tenants. This report does include updated revenue forecasts from the port side and the other master tenants. So we've got pretty good information from them as to how they feel that they're going to be doing. It's important to note on this forecast as well that the district's rental abatement and deferment program will expire on June 30th. So that's taken into effect in our new numbers. And for clarification, the operating revenues shown here do not include the county property taxes or the grant. And, you know, the property taxes are solely for HUD control. So that's what they're designated for. So they're not in this area. So if we go to the next slide, we can look at operating expenses. And the operating expenses, same idea. Fiscal year 21-22 forecast is the only number that been changed on this spreadsheet or this chart. The operating expenses in the preliminary budget for 21-22 is $6.529 million. This is an increase of 1% over the fiscal year 2021 mid-year budget expense of $6.481. Some noted increases in the operating expenses are in the following areas: general accounting and business software, general insurance policy premiums, salaries and benefits from proposed change in staffing considerations and proposed pay increases, PERS contributions from the above changes, and normal annual rate increases, and workers' compensation, health insurance. Those are some noted areas that have been increasing in the operating expenses. Some noted decreases in the operating expenses are in the following areas: the BSC consulting services and the dredging expenses. Also in the current fiscal year 2021 budget, we talked about reallocations, positioning of some of the line items. The one-time dredging expense at the entrance to the Keys that is offset by the city's pro rata share of this expense was reallocated to the operating expense section of the budget from the special funding section. We put it into the dredging expense area. And so that did increase the operating expenses total because we moved it from being by itself, we put it into that venue because they weren't, they didn't aesthetic serve exactly. We had our expense, but we didn't recover as the full amount. We didn't expect to on that, so we moved it into where we show expense net of the city that we come in. And the Inner Harbor dredging of this kind will not be necessary in the upcoming fiscal year. That's probably the largest decrease that we're going to have. But there were some additional costs associated with regulatory permits that are going to be anticipated in the coming year. Next slide. We're going to look at the salaries and benefits. There's a proposed increase in salaries and benefits of 9% over the current year budget. Go to the next slide, please. But this increase, the increase in the salaries and benefits represents only 2.1% between the fiscal year 1920 and 21-22. 1920 being prior to COVID. In the current fiscal year 2021 budget, we were in a wage and hiring freeze, and there were savings from employee vacancies that occurred during the current fiscal year that have not been filled during the freeze. And that's what I've got on.
Okay, and obviously we can come back to any of that. We are going to insert another presentation here. We have, the Port District has certainly benefited from our engagement with Mary Beth Redding, with Bartell and Associates. I think for all the commissioners tonight who had an opportunity to see her actuarial work as it relates to our CalPERS retirement systems, both for our miscellaneous employees and for our public safety employees. And we've included her again this year. We're thankful she could join us tonight and give a presentation to the board and to the public on where we stand vis-a-vis those protections. So, Mary Beth, take it away.
Thank you. I hope everyone can hear me okay.
Yes, we can. Thank you, Mary Beth.
Great. As much as I would love to be there in person with you all, it's kind of nice to be able to do this over Zoom and make sure I do get at least an opportunity to talk to you this year. So my presentation today is about the CalPERS costs that the district is going to be... okay. Sorry. Jessica, how do I turn the page, or are you going to control that?
I'm going to do that for you, so just tell me next slide.
Okay. Can I have the next slide? Or can I can do it. Okay. Sorry about that. Okay. We're going to talk a little bit about how the CalPERS plans providing pensions for your employees got into the position where they are and then where exactly they are right now, and then options the district has going forward. So I'm going to start.
You'll need to tell Jessica.
Okay, yeah, I thought I had control and I don't. So there are some four main reasons why we think CalPERS pension plans are currently underfunded. I'm going to go through each of them in order. Can I have the next slide, please? The most important is CalPERS investment return over the past many years. So the pensions are defined benefit pension plans that the district and CalPERS has promised to pay a specified pension to employees for their lifetime when they retire. And then it's CalPERS and the district's responsibility to make sure the funds are there to pay that pension. The pension doesn't adjust like a 401k plan. You're required to pay the pension that's been promised. So it's very important that the assets earn the rate that CalPERS actuaries think they're going to earn. And in this chart, the blue line represents over time, about the last 30 years, what rate was assumed to be earned. And the green line, each little dot on the line is the actual return that CalPERS earned for the year period. You can see the really bad returns in 2008 and 9 that we all know about. And since then, even lots of good years and bad years. Any year where the returns below the blue line is a bad year, even if returns were greater than zero. So if we look at 2020, June 30, 2020, CalPERS earned 4.7%. which was not bad, but it was far short of the 7% they expected. So over time, these losses have led to underfunding of CalPERS, even though in a long-term basis, they're now at the point where they, over the years, they've earned 7.9%. In these interim years, there have been a lot of shortfalls that are still sort of dragging down the fund performance. Can I have the next slide, please? A big reason for that is CalPERS's contribution policy. They were, beginning in 2003, they were adjusted, they were asked to smooth out all the contributions, not make there be a lot of ups and downs in the rates so that agencies could budget well. And that did, they did a really good job. They have a good plan. They kept rates really smooth, but what it meant was that not enough money was going into the plan, particularly to make up for poor performance. And so as a result, the CalPERS system became very underfunded. Can I have the next slide? The other thing that is a huge cause of underfunding is enhanced benefits. So in the early 2000s, many of CalPERS pension plans were very well funded, you know, typically 150% funded. And the thought was that, geez, this is more money than we could ever need. What should we do with it? I know, let's increase benefits. It turned out to not be a good move because shortly after that we had market crashes and find that now the system is more likely 70% funded. But for the Port District, Ventura Port District did not go along with everybody else and increase the retirement pensions for its people, and as a result, is in much, much better shape than your typical California pension plan. To go along with that, so these are the Tier 1 formulas. They're not particularly meaningful to you, I know, but those represent the level of benefits employees will get, 2% of their final pay if they retire at 55. But we now have a new class of TUPRA people. These are employees first hired after January 1st, 2013. They have lower benefit formulas. All of their compensation may not be counted towards their benefit if it exceeds certain limits. And the employees are paying half the cost of the pension themselves, as opposed to a lower amount of cost sharing in your Tier 1 people. So this has really been in place for quite a while now and is really beginning to influence the district's costs. Have the next slide. So the last thing is a little bit hard to understand, but it's really a demographic issue. And if we look at the state, we see that there's a lot more pension liability for retirees than for active employees. For miscellaneous employees, it's about 56% of the liability is for retirees, but for safety, almost two-thirds is for retirees. And that's because we have more and more retirees in the plans, and because there are fewer and fewer active employees. You know, cities and other public agencies are generally not expanding the number of their employees. What happens when you have a lot of retirees and the plan is well-funded is that you have this big pool of assets. Those assets are having gains and losses. Those change your contribution in a very large amount relative to the rest of your budget, and particularly your payroll. So having a lot of retirees increases what we call contribution volatility and unpredictability. It's a good thing to have retirees because that's what the plan's meant for, but it does cause this unpredictability. The Port District is, again, very unusual among California plans, particularly for its safety members. Only 35% of the liability belongs to retirees. And that's a really good thing for being able to manage your costs. Okay, go to the next slide. So CalPERS has been looking at the continued lack of funding progress among its plans and has made a whole raft of changes in the past several years. I don't want to go through them all, just to say that they're all being phased in over time. So we know that during this phase in time, costs will be going up and up and up in a very predictable way. All of the changes should lead to the CalPERS plans being better funded, but the only way that can happen is by employers, and in some cases employees, but generally the employers paying more money. Okay. There's no other way for money to get into the system, either excellent investment earnings or higher employer contributions, and it's designed for higher employer contributions. The next slide. We do have one policy that kind of excited to see if it actually comes into effect this year. CalPERS has had a policy on the books for about 6 years that says when they have a really good earnings year, what they're going to do is kind of split the excess earnings with employers. Some of it will be used to make contribution rates go down, but some of it they'll use to make their investments a little bit more conservative. So they'll kind of sell some stocks and buy some bonds. When you have investments that are more conservative and earn less, you need more money to achieve your goal of paying out pensions in the future. But it should be a much more predictable earnings and predictable contribution pattern over time. So we think this is a good thing. The first time it's likely to come into play is this June 30th, and so everyone's kind of excited to see if the CalPERS board is really going to follow through with it. So that's CalPERS' plan to get things back on track. Question? Okay. Can I have the next slide? Okay, we're going to talk now about each particular plan that the district maintains. First, we'll talk about the miscellaneous employees. And miscellaneous is everybody who's not sworn safety, so sort of everybody else. We just have a few statistics here about them. Between 2012, which is as far back as CalPERS maintains individual records for small plans, the number of employees has gone from 25 to 30, so quite a bit of growth. And the same time, if you look at the retired employees, currently we have about 27 retirees, so fewer retirees than active employees, as well as 16 people who used to work for the district that don't anymore. This is, again, a little bit unusual that we have fewer retirees than active employees, but for now it's helping suppress the district's costs. If we split up the 30 active employees, there's 22 classic members, and 8 of the new PEPRA members who have the lower benefit formula and are paying more of the costs themselves. Over time, as we get more and more PEPRA employees, that will help the costs. The next slide, please. In terms of funded percentage, the miscellaneous plan is 75% funded at June 30th of 2019. And June 30th of 2019 is now, as far as CalPERS is concerned. That's the last report we have. For our modeling that I'm going to show you, we've pulled in June 30th, 2020 financial results, but all of the employee data goes back to 2019. The green bars in these charts represent the amount of assets in the fund, and the colored bars are the liabilities, the amount, the present value of the benefits we owe for future pensions. And what you can see is that due to sort of magical rounding, even though the assets are growing every year and the liabilities are growing every year, the unfunded liability has stayed at about $3 million every year, and we think it probably will next year. So that's a shortfall, how much the district owes right now for benefits that employees and retirees have already earned. Okay. That's calculated at a 7% discount rate, so CalPERS is essentially charging you 7% interest on that unfunded liability. And they're billing you annually to repay that amount. Okay. Can I have the next slide? Okay, so the next slides are going to be projections of contributions, where we think the CalPERS required payments will go. Just sort of summarize the assumptions. We have built in the 4.7% return for 2020. We've not, everybody's very, very hopeful about returns for the current fiscal year. We only have 2 weeks left. Our fingers are crossed. But for our projections, we just assumed the 7%. We did not get overly hopeful. And the other thing that's happening in our projections is we're assuming that current employees leave and are replaced with the lower-cost PEPRA people. Can I have the next slide? Okay. So this is a projection for the miscellaneous plan. It shows that on average in the current fiscal year, which has about 2 more weeks, the district is paying about 21% of payroll for pensions for miscellaneous people, which means that every dollar you pay someone in pay, you send CalPERS 21 cents. The green line represents where we think that rate is going to go over the next 10 years until it reaches about 30% in fiscal year 31-32. So at that point, it'll be 30 cents out of, for every dollar of payroll that gets sent to CalPERS. Now, these contributions really depend a lot on what CalPERS investments earn in the future. We can't tell you what that's going to be. I wish we could, but we can't. But we can tell you where it's likely to average overall. So the green line represents the most likely place rates will be. When we do our modeling and look at probabilities of different investment returns, we kind of put a 50th percentile range around it, and we can tell you that half the time this rate, 10 years out, will be between about 16% of pay and 38% of pay. So a pretty wide range. Half the time it'll be in there. Most of the time it'll be near this 30% in the middle. A quarter of the time it could be higher than 38% of pay, and a quarter of the time lower than 15%. So there is, depending on what investments do, and investments are very volatile, there's, you know, a lot of range that could go in. Can I have the next slide, please? Over time, this is a 30-year projection, so it's the same first 10 years, but they're squished in, so the line looks a little bit steeper in the initial 10 years. Over time, we expect the rates to kind of max out at about that 30%. And then they slowly start to drop off, and eventually when we get to about the early 2040s, we expect that the unfunded liability will be paid off. We expect that most of the classic people will have retired. You'll have only PEPRA people left, and that CalPERS investments will be in a little more stable investment, so less volatility to them. And we expect at that point the contribution rates will be under 10% of pay. So if you're looking at the long-term expectation, what does this plan really cost us, it really costs you about 10% of pay once you pay off the unfunded liability. So how rates went from 20 to 30% of pay, where we are now, down to 10, is that the district paid a lot of money into CalPERS to get rid of the unfunded liability. Okay. Here's the next slide. Just have a couple slides that shows you how that contribution rate breaks down. There's two parts to the contribution. The easy part to understand is the cost of benefits that employees earn every year as they work. We call that the normal cost. And that's this peachy colored line that's running for now about 10% of pay. The second part of the contribution relates to paying off the unfunded liability, and it's the red line that slopes up. And can I have the next slide? It's actually billed to the district as a dollar amount. It's pretty much a fixed amount no matter how many employees you have. And that's really what's driving the increase in costs. You can see it going up from, you know, 187 to 21 next year and really increasing in dollar amounts every year till it's close to $500,000 in the 31-32 year. So that's the payment on the unfunded liability that is really generating your cost increases. Okay, I'm going to go through pretty much the same slides for safety. We can go a little bit faster. Your safety group, as of June 30th, 2019, had 13 employees, so it has been growing quite a bit over time. Only 7 retirees, very unusual among CalPERS safety agencies that you have that few retirees, and 4 people who used to be employed by the district and who are not. And among those 13 people, we have 3 of the newer PEPRA people who are, again, paying more of their own costs. Next slide, please. This plan is 79% funded. I talked a bit at the beginning about the enhanced benefit formulas and that the district did not adopt them. Almost all safety agencies in the state did adopt the higher enhanced formulas, and you can see that difference in the funded percent. Your plan is 79% funded, and the average safety plan across California is less than 70% funded. So it's quite a bit better funded, and really in hindsight was a very excellent decision. Overall, the plan is close to 80% funded, and it has about $1 million in unfunded liability. The next slide, please. We talked about the same assumptions as before. The next slide. Okay, so I'll talk in a couple slides about what's happening at the beginning, but we see the same general trend for safety as for the miscellaneous plan of the contribution expected to increase over the next 10 years until it ends up at about 31% of pay in the year 31-32, with, again, a fairly high range where it could be, okay, but most likely around 31% of pay. And the next slide. That 31% of pay is about the peak rate. After that, the rate starts dropping for the same reasons as miscellaneous, and then down to an ultimate level of 13.5% of pay when the unfunded liability is paid off, because safety benefits are more valuable than miscellaneous employees' benefits. I do want to say, so 30% of pay probably sounds like a lot to be paying for pensions, but I have to tell you that if we go around the state, that's a very low rate. Most of the safety agencies are looking at current rates, probably close to 50% of pay, projected rates much higher than that. 80% of pay is not unusual, and we've seen some projecting out close to 100% of pay, with a dollar, you know, sort of a dollar in payroll and a dollar in to CalPERS. So the district's really in a very good position relative to others. Okay. So the one thing that's a little bit odd about the safety people is we have a lower unfunded liability rate in the first couple years, and that's because, can I have the next slide? So one more. So the unfunded liability is being billed to you as a dollar amount every year in this red line, increasing just the same way we saw it for miscellaneous. But because the district added a fair number of safety people and a lot of safety payroll in the last valuation for the year ended 2019, that made the rate go down. The percent of pay went down, even though the dollar contribution was still going up. So it's just a little quirk in the first couple of years. Next slide. Okay, so if we add together the numbers for the miscellaneous plan and the safety plan, they have very similar rates, but safety is smaller. Add up the total dollars. For the current fiscal year, you're paying about $527,000 to CalPERS, $629,000 for next year, and then a lot of that's due to adding people, and then increasing dollar amounts every year in the future. 31-32 is very close to the peak, and you're looking at over $1 million a year paid to CalPERS 10 years out. So pretty much a doubling of the dollars in that time period. Okay, so the question then is what could or should the district do about these costs? And one of the answers is really to do nothing. That, we were monitoring the projected contributions. We know what they are. We think we can budget for them. And so we're just going to do nothing and pay the contributions as they're billed. And that's not all public agencies feel they can make that statement, and so many of them are looking for other options. So the other options you have are hoping that favorable investment performance will reduce the unfunded liability, and I'll have a little more detail on that in the next slide. But if CalPERS were to consistently, not just for the current year, outperform its assumed rate of 7%, that would make substantial inroads into the unfunded liability. The last two bullets are things other agencies are looking at because, you know, when you come down to it, you're paying a 7% interest on this unfunded liability. So they're looking at ways to pay down that unfunded liability and reduce the amount of interest charges they're paying. And the two options you have are making additional payments to CalPERS or opening a supplemental trust. So the next slide. I did want to show you the impact of really good investment return because it's almost magical. The left-hand column, the 7% return in 2021, is what's built into our numbers, and we project a $4.3 million unfunded liability as of June 30th, 21. If instead CalPERS earns 20%, which they seem on track for, and maybe even a little bit better, pension liabilities would stay the same. The assets would be much larger. The unfunded liability would go down to $2.6 million, and you would be all of a sudden at 85% funded. So even though it looks at this point like that's fairly likely, the trick is, can you hold on to that money and continue to earn 7% going forward? That's where the investment advisors are really saying they're not so sure that returns, long-run returns, will be at the 7% level, at least for the next 10 years or so. But if you can hold on to those dollars and earn 7% going forward, a lot of the unfunded is just gone right away from investment performance. Next slide. So talk quickly about the other options. And again, go back to, should you decide to just pay CalPERS contributions as billed, that's fine, because we know that doing other things takes money and you have a lot of other uses for your money, particularly if, you know, it costs you money if you have to borrow for that. So one option to reduce the unfunded liability is just make extra payments to CalPERS. We think in terms of investments, it's probably your best investment choice. If nothing else, their investment fees are lower. They're a public agency. They're not making a profit off of this. You have two ways to do it with CalPERS. You can kind of like refinance your unfunded to a shorter period, so sort of like refinancing your mortgage from 30 years to 15 years. It locks you into higher short-term payments. You'll pay less interest in the long run, but a lot of people don't like this option because you really are locked into the higher payments in the near term. The much more popular option is just called additional discretionary payments, which means when you have some extra money, you send it off to CalPERS. You and CalPERS will agree on how that money is going to be used. Once you make that agreement, it's locked in. And typically what they'll do is reduce all of your future contribution requirements just a little bit every year. And just to note that even though I said probably this is a better investment decision in the long run, there is no guaranteed savings. You could make a large additional payment to CalPERS and they could have a terrible investment year the next year and lose all that money. Okay. So it's always risky. Next slide. The second option is to open your own trust, a supplemental trust. These are fairly new, although they've probably been around about 5 years now. It's a trust that only holds money that can go to CalPERS. So the district has total control over it. You would decide how much money to put into the trust, if you put any money into the trust at all. It's totally your decision. And then whenever you feel it's the right time, you would pull out however much money you want from the trust and give it to CalPERS. So you can use this to stabilize your budget, or you could use it just to accumulate funds that eventually you would give to CalPERS and say, here, we're paying off our unfunded. The district also has total discretion over where that monies are invested. So that's a fairly popular thing just because it's so flexible. Can I go to the next slide? If you compare the two sort of prepayment options of a supplemental trust and CalPERS, really the decision comes down to flexibility. So if you want to set money aside, you want to have some flexibility about when exactly you're going to use it and how much you're going to use it. You would like the supplemental trust. If you feel like you have extra money, you're happy, you don't need it ever again in the future, you can just give it to CalPERS. Likely it'll have a little better investment return, but it is a lot more restricted. So those are the choices people are making in choosing to pay down the unfunded liability faster than is scheduled. Again, both are options. And then finally, I'm fine with the next slide. Okay, if we talk about how are people coming up with the money to do these things, some are actually budgeting extra payments towards CalPERS into their regular budgets. Some are using what we call one-time money. So if you have a budget surplus at the end of the year, the board might have a resolution that says some portion of that surplus will go to CalPERS. Some who are feeling financially strained are negotiating with their employees for employees to pay extra towards CalPERS. And then finally, one that is extremely popular this year are pension obligation bonds. This is a situation where the agency will issue a bond, and the proceeds of the bond will be given to CalPERS to pay down the pension unfunded liability. The idea is that you can issue a bond for somewhere around, I don't know, 3.5% interest right now. And the hope is that CalPERS will earn 7% on the money. So there's an interest arbitrage between them. There is no guaranteed savings at all. You can win or you can lose doing these things. And in fact, the GFOA, which is the Government Finance Officers Association, has issued and just recently reissued an advisory saying they don't think these are a good idea. One of the reasons they give is it uses up your capacity for borrowing. But they are very, very popular right now, and I think at least most of the municipalities we know are hearing from many of bond advisors trying to talk them into doing this. It's not something we would typically recommend. So that was a really quick overview of where the district is for CalPERS and some of your options you have at this time. Do I have any questions?
All right. Commissioners, any questions for Mary Beth? Well, we have the floor. Okay, none from Mike. Not seeing any. So let me ask you a question, Mary Beth. So you had a number of those charts that showed us eventually dropping down to 10%, roughly. And at our peak, we were at 30. So were you saying, I want to make sure I'm following this, that the delta there, that drop is our unfunded liability and the interest we're paying on it? Is that what the difference is between?
Right. So right now, you're paying, can you go back several slides to one of them that has the peachy line and the red line and the green line? One more. This will do. Right now, you have two pieces of your contribution. You're paying the peachy-colored contribution that's the normal cost, and eventually that's the one that's going to end up around 10%. You'll always pay 10% of pay because people will always be earning benefits. The red line, and it was much more marked for miscellaneous, mm-hmm. is the amount you're paying to pay down the current unfunded liability, to make up the current shortfall. Eventually, you'll get done paying that off. And we talk about it as one unfunded liability. Really, there's like 30 layers of it, and they all get paid off over different times, and they all drop off your schedule at different times. That's why you see the curve coming down. But 20 years out, it's all paid off. Hopefully, we haven't generated much, if any, new unfunded liability, and you're left with just the 10%.
And how are we paying that off?
You're paying that off because every year you're sending CalPERS 30% of pay. 10%, can you go up one more slide? Or backwards one more slide?
Okay.
Yeah. For safety, if we look at 2030, you're sending, I don't know if you can see my cursor, you're sending CalPERS close to 15% of pay to cover current benefits. Plus, you're sending them another 16% of pay to pay down the unfunded liability.
Okay.
So you're paying it down right now. CalPERS is making you pay it down.
Okay. But it's only going to get paid down if we earn at least the 7% that they forecast, correct? Okay.
Right. So every year they earn less than 7%, you pick up a new piece of unfunded liability.
Okay. Right. So it actually being all, quote, all paid off in the future is speculative, we shall say.
Yeah, can you go up one more slide, Jessica?
Okay.
That's why we have the little numbers up here. most of the time, we think it's paid off.
Yeah.
But there is a decent probability that it won't be all paid off.
Right. Okay. Very good. Just want to make sure that was clear. Thank you for that.
No, that was a great question. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. All right. Well, not seeing any questions from commissioners for you. Thank you again, Mary Beth, for the presentation. Always fascinating. And I
thank you very much for having me be here.
Sure. Okay. I'll turn it back over to you, Brian.
Sure. Thank you, Mary Beth, and we will cut her loose so she can jump off. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, we talked about this at the last meeting in the workshop. Much of this is the same, although maybe a couple of phrasings of position titles have changed a little bit. The senior Harbor Patrol officer is in bold, again, because that is the net effect of these changes. There's a lot of movement, but the net effect is one new FTE, a new senior Harbor Patrol officer. Okay. We also have the addition of a capital projects manager, a business operations analyst, 1-2, an elimination of two vacant positions, property manager and management assistant. So you can start to see plus 3, minus 2, and so on in terms of how we get to the plus 1 net change. And then within existing classifications, adding senior classifications for the business operations manager position, adding senior there, as I said, under administrative assistant clerk. We had some discussion about that with the board at the last meeting. My recommendation is to move forward with a second position within that classification that is still clerk, but as opposed to administrative assistant, which would remain the higher level classification of the executive assistant. And we've seen examples of that at the county, Santa Barbara, I think also County Ventura, City of Ventura, and so on, that have very similar kinds of job duties and responsibilities. That are confidential in nature and have a higher level of reporting to the general manager. Marketing event coordinator, there is a marketing event coordinator. This is adding a 2 to that, just like you see with the business operations analyst, 1-2. So I think we have 2 org charts that will follow, just like last time. This one, the areas in gray are the areas that are subtracted that you just saw in sort of more bulleted format, but here you can see it across the organization. So the elimination of the management assistant position, the elimination of the property manager position, and the landscaper, what am I seeing there again?
It's a vacancy. Yeah.
It's a current vacancy, that's right. And that's basically it on the reductions or eliminations. And then here on our proposals, again, this is where you see additions, the Senior Harbor Patrol, Business Operations Analyst 1-2 that doesn't currently exist, Capital Projects Manager that doesn't currently exist, and we have 1 Electrical Mechanical Technician, but 1 additional is added. And then in, I'll call it maybe salmon color, the senior positions that are added. You can see that across the organization as well, up at the executive assistant clerk level, marketing event coordinator 1-2, senior business operations manager along with business operations manager. So, and you can also see where these fit with in regards to departments and in regards to vice supervision to each of those positions.
So getting your slide there back where you described the go back one more. What's not on there, but which is on those org charts, is you subbing out a landscape position for an electrical, right? Am I understanding that?
Yeah, maybe you can describe that one.
The recruitment would be for a more senior level person, and then the responsibilities of the gardener, landscaper, the gardener may be eligible, or we may recruit for a landscaper position, just basically combine one role, combine 2 roles into 1 FTE. So rather than recruiting a landscaper and keeping a gardener, we may recruit a landscaper, period, and then also recruit a technician.
So is it a new position? That's the part that I'm trying to understand, because it's not listed here.
Let's put it this way. It's not a foregone conclusion that the gardener would become a landscaper, but we may recruit in that direction. But the vacancy we're recruiting will be a technician.
So yeah, that landscaper is just a landscaper.
Uh-huh.
Where here he's calling it landscaper/gardener. So I think what you're doing is you're
there's a gardener currently below the landscaper. Go back one slide, sorry, Jessica.
Well, there is no landscaper currently. It's a vacant.
But it's a vacant position.
Yeah. Yeah.
The landscaper is a vacant position.
Okay.
In the next version of the org chart, landscaper and gardener
become one cell.
So I think and then that creates an opportunity for another electromechanical.
Yes.
That's what I okay.
So it's like a 1-2 position in the landscaping.
Got it. Okay. Just wanted to make sure I was following that correctly.
Yes. Same approach. The capital projects manager, you're taking somebody else from the staff to play that role.
Well, we're recruiting the position.
All right. Sorry to interrupt. Carry on.
But I'm pausing in case there was any other questions.
No, you
got it.
Okay.
Okay. We have a couple of slides here on capital improvements. We had some detail last time about the village and about the CIP program as a whole, Harbor-wide, and I'd like Todd to walk through that.
Yeah, so to retain consistency, the board report shows the capital improvement projects laid out the way we always have, which is this year, and then as an appendix or an attachment is the five-year plan. However, what we're presenting the format tonight is to give a little bit more transparency as how the investment of those capital projects are broken into the village, which is what we see here. These are the different projects. I'll highlight a couple of them. We talked about earlier the 1567 Lighthouse Building. Last time, we had used the FY19-20 budget of $650,000. Bumped that up to $725,000 because lumber prices are ridiculous. And labor prices are ridiculous as well. Paid parking infrastructure, we've talked about before. I think not much else here garners much talk, except just to reiterate that the wayfinding signs, the bid will go out next week. Well, actually, it goes out this week now. Presumably, we'll be ready to publish tomorrow. Next slide. Oh, I guess also I'll mention the trash enclosures we awarded tonight. So those are carryover dollars from last year. We just could not get those across the finish line to be invoiced this year. Next slide. This is the remaining balance where we're spending on the rest of the harbor. As you can see, a lot smaller chunk of change throughout the rest of the harbor, but we also have less direct management of the master parcels. The big thing here is the launch ramp parking lot needs restriping and resurfacing. That is the component that we're viewing as the cash match for the Division of Boating Waterways to replace our floating docks next year. So we're going to do a portion. They're going to do probably a 2 to 1 or 4 to 1 in-kind contribution to ours when we look at that number. So we're pretty thrilled with being able to spend that money. A couple more carryover items I got thrown in the last minute as well. One new thing I should have mentioned on the last slide, and it's too bad that Commissioner Brennan's not here because I'm sure he'd be thrilled, is we've added EV charging stations to the capital project. We advanced that 1 year. It had previously been sitting in next year. There's 3 grant opportunities coming up this summer. We're looking to capitalize on it. And right now, throwing a number out there, we're anticipating an 80% return on investment. We're budgeting for 50, with $40,000 coming back. Next slide. This is the full 5 year. If I made this all under one single slide, you'd not be able to read it. It's already hard enough to read, I'm sure. So I've just basically taken the first 30 items and put here. It's the same thing that's in your report identically. And then the next slide, Jessica, is the rest. I don't want to call attention to anything right now, but certainly if you have questions later, we can certainly revisit. But this is the 5-year forecast for our CIP. Next slide. New last year was a new way of representing the tenant improvement budget. So just to reiterate, we have 3 categories. Scheduled improvements are something that is currently in a lease obligation for the district to spend money. There's a couple of extras in there. For example, we're going to remodel the courtesy patrol office. That's not a lease technically, but it's going into as a tenant improvement. The unscheduled improvements are, well, we know certain leases expire at the end. Their term ends within the next 12 months. So there is the reasonable possibility that those tenants could turn over and we might need to repaint, we might need to do new linoleum floor, or fiber optic, or more. So this is a ratio, an anticipated ratio of how much money it would cost to renovate every suite that's coming up in the next 12 months, and that's our estimate. So we have a piggy bank
And then contingency would be someone breaking the lease early. They vacate, the lease is not terminated. We have a smaller percentage chance associated with a tenant vacating not at the end of the lease, but there is a chance. So that basically represents the three categories. As you can see, the biggest thing is the obligation of tenant improvements, and that biggest obligation is actually National Park Service. When we signed that lease, we made an agreement. I think it's about $150,000 in improvements that we are committed to make. 90% of that will be repaid over the 5-year term. Next slide.
Well, that's a cost we had anticipated. I mean, we all knew there were issues. And maybe I'd ask you on your unscheduled improvements.
Yes.
Do you do any qualitative analysis of the spaces that you know are coming up? In other words, some, boy, they haven't been looked at in 10 years, but some we just did 3 years ago. I mean, that kind of thing.
Every single suite has a dollar value associated with it.
Okay.
Dollars per square foot, that number could be
$4. So you've done some detail analysis. It wasn't just a spread across kind of thing. Okay, good.
Next slide. So when we take the numbers that we just talked about, and I should have mentioned that the bottom of the capital program is the ADA-specific component, we have these three numbers that stack up. So we have the capital improvement expenses, there's a 4-year history, and then we see 21, 22 in the middle, and then a 5-year forecast. This summarizes basically our anticipation of the expenses moving forward for those categories. This is the dash gray line. Everybody was mad at last time, represented in a different way. Next slide.
All right. I think I'm jumping in here. So we've got total revenue, which is really purple plus green, so all the way up there to the top, and you're looking at the same thing, 4-year history and 5-year forecast.
I'm sorry. There's been an internal error. You will be disconnected now. Goodbye.
Far away.
It's up. Oh, no, it's not. It's up.
Just read it up.
1669.
Water break.
900.
She's got the right.
6833.
6833.
Yeah, that's the error.
Welcome to Zoom.
Yep.
Enter your meeting ID followed by pound. You entered 8740841099. This meeting ID does not exist.
Maybe we didn't pay our bill.
Hey, we always pay our bills.
Well, that's right.
Enter your participant ID followed by.
Corey's like, you're talking about my department now.
You have joined the meeting as an attendee and will be muted throughout the meeting.
We
haven't had a meeting that's gone.
No, I can't.
Just make a large talk.
The host would like you to unmute your microphone. You can press *6 to unmute. You are unmuted.
All right. I hope we're back.
Saw a nod. I think I've nodded. Yeah.
You see nods? All right. Okay.
Can you move the thingy off the screen, Jessica?
Sorry.
All right. Brian, back to you.
Okay. So we've got a preliminary budget here that both shows 4 years of history and 5 years of forecast. Total revenue is all the way up there on the green chart, so you can see that number there at 21-22 at roughly a little over 10 million, I believe, right in that area. You see that continue to climb. You also see total expenses. Now, when we say total expenses, I don't believe this includes capital improvements.
Or tenant improvements.
Or tenant improvements. So really, the area of green is what ends up being used to help fund capital improvements and ADA and tenant improvements and so on. Rarely are we able to only use that green portion. Oftentimes, it's working against our total reserves, which continue to exceed that 40%. But just to understand. Mm-hmm. That's where the money, that green area is where the money comes for capital projects, okay. Tenant improvements, et cetera. So, okay, go ahead and jump to the next one. Okay, and this is also preliminary budget numbers. We continually look at the unrestricted reserve forecast, same thing for your history, 5 years forward. The area in orange is that forecasted unrestricted reserves. The idea is that stays above the blue, the light blue area, which in terms of our five-year forecast, it does. That's where I always want to be in terms of forecasting. We will remain above that. So that then pulls out those costs for capital projects and tenant improvements. And it says, after we do that, what happens to our reserve? And this shows that we continue to meet that as forecasted over the next 5 years. This is continually updated, but we worked through a lot last year, as you recall, to try to stay above that line. And it was almost bouncing off of it, but we were able to keep it up there. So this is a little healthier now that we are beginning to rebound. So I think that might be the last slide. See, it is. We will leave this PowerPoint up and turn it back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
It's helpful if you do, Vice Chair, you've been referencing page numbers in the packet. It's really helpful to us if there's questions on a specific topic of the budget. It helps us to be able to double reference.
Great. Good. Thank you very much, all of you, for that. A lot of good work here. Okay, Commissioners, before I open it up and ask for any public comment, do you have any questions for staff? Can you put that back up so I can see? Okay. Not seeing any. Okay.
See if there's public comment.
Yeah. So I'm going to open up the public comment portion. Is there anyone out there wishing to comment on this item? Waiting. Okay. We're not seeing any, so we will close the public comment portion. I'll bring it back to the commissioners for questions, comments, or other. So, Ev?
Hey, and thanks, Chris. You know, in terms of the ways to manage our unfunded liability, in the past we decided to do nothing, and I still think that that's the right approach. I think that the impact to our bonding is could be significant. Recall we have a relatively older fishing pier that we've managed to work very carefully to maintain its useful life. But that is something that we want to certainly protect our bonding capacity. Should be something that needs to address it. And the other thing is, I think our position relative to everybody else, not everybody, but the large majority of other agencies, it's really on the favorable side. So I still maintain the view that our current unfunded liability is manageable, particularly as we look at our income increases over time. The other thing, I'm a big fan of the dollar line, but I think of what I was pleased to see, Brian and Gloria, you really managed to deflect off that 40% point last year when we looked at this presentation a lot closer. And I thought your approach to the huge budget was very thoughtful with that line. So, I'm very comfortable with the budget as you presented it, Brian. And thought you did a really good job of that, and I appreciate it. Thank you for my thoughts, Chris.
All right. Thank you, Ev.
Thank you, Ev.
I guess Mike, to chime in on what Ev was saying, can we go back to the chart that had the orange? I think it was one of the last charts you presented.
That one.
I mean, if we were back in 2017-18 with that huge spike, what caused that? Was that the loan that we took out?
That's exactly it. Yeah. 2018, we took out the loan. That year, we pretty much did engineering costs. We weren't ready to do actual construction costs. Right. And then you can see in 1920, we used those funds, and that's why it came down.
Yeah, so it kind of gives a false impression. But if we were that fat again, then that idea of putting some money in, I forget out what term Mary Beth used.
Yeah, unfunded liability.
Yeah, putting some money into an account where we could then later choose to apply it to the unfunded liability, that would
make, that would be more tempting, but as I look at this chart, and maybe just the optics of the chart, it doesn't look like there's a huge amount of fat above that 40%.
There really isn't.
Yeah, and so I guess I would have, that, my conclusion is I agree with Ev, is let's just kind of pay the bill as we go. I don't see a lot of fat there to create that account. So then related question to that is, it all comes down to our forecast of revenue, right? And I think it was $9.3 million was the forecast, is that right?
I believe it was.
Back to the second slide. Just.
And I think somewhere in the package, I saw the historical projections, the historical revenues and compared to this projection. And it seemed like 9.3 was the highest we've ever projected.
In the last few years.
Yeah, in the last 4 years. And so that, I mean, that's the question. Everybody's talking about this is going to be a big year, right? Your traffic counts are up. Your personnel counts are up. People are busting to get out. Is 9.3 high enough? And I balance that against, well, it's the highest we've ever forecasted. So, but I think that's a key question. My conclusion was, I like conservative budgets. We've talked about this a lot. Is it high enough? Considering it's the highest you've ever forecasted, maybe it is high enough. And if we overachieve on revenue, well, then that just creates that additional funds, and we can apply those later.
And it's the point of having a major budget as well.
Right? Yes.
Which is the opportunity to revisit the first 6 months of the year, you know, to the higher or to the lesser, right? And having to adjust things if we need to, if things don't come out as we project. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting year to make projections, right?
Yeah, I mean, right.
It was an interesting year to make projections last year. Interesting is probably the wrong word. Challenging. And it's a little bit challenging doing it this year. Now, we hope it's challenging for the right reasons as opposed to last year being challenging for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, you could almost get caught up in the excitement and go, ooh, we're going to go.
Yeah, I think our little check there was Gloria's and Todd's evaluation of, you know, where does that stand versus where do we think we're going to end the fiscal year? And it had a little bit more than 3% increase over where we think we're going to land at the end of the fiscal year. All of a sudden, that doesn't sound so
right,
you know, aggressive,
right?
And if it's under, you know, good for our tenants, good for the Port District, and we'll be back in, you know, middle of the year, and we'll look where we're applying those funds.
Yeah, like Mike, I'm a conservative person when it comes to these kind of budgeting forecasts. I'm totally comfortable with that, and you know, I mean, as we've heard from, I'll say the health professionals, you know. We're not out of the woods just yet, right? There's other potential, so I'm very comfortable with that. Again, I hope we're wrong in the sense that we underestimated, but I like that. And certainly up until a few years ago, there wouldn't have been a city or county out there that wouldn't tell you they wish they had never gotten their pension obligation bonds. So I don't know if something's changed, or if it's just, as Mary Beth alluded to, that the bond folks are pushing them, the bond industry is pushing them, but I'm completely opposed to pension obligation bonds. That's just taking money out of one pocket and putting it in another and paying interest for the pleasure of it. You know, it doesn't make any sense to me. And the last thing I would mention, I thought a very interesting slide of Mary Beth that says if their earnings come through at the end of the year as they forecast, which she said was around 20%, that we would be at about 85% funded. There are a lot of people who suggest that that's actually about the sweet spot, 85 to 90%, when it comes to your funding of your retirement program. So I'm perfectly comfortable, you know, standing pat with what we are, what we've been doing for now. Although I will say, if kind of using Mike's analogy, if suddenly we had a really high number, then maybe that's something for us to think about. But we're not nearly there yet. So anyway, there's a lot of great information, good work here. I appreciate that. Any other comments, questions, commissioners, on this?
We'll go back to the capital improvement plan. I liked what was presented. with the one caveat that I stated earlier is before we spend all that money on Suite 100 and the parking, we're going to have some more dialogue.
Absolutely.
Okay. Not seeing anything, Commissioners, we do need a couple actions taken here. What is your pleasure? We need to adopt resolution number 3417, approving the preliminary budget and five-year capital improvement plan, and resolution 3418, approving our salary schedule for non-represented employees.
So I'll move both items.
Okay.
And I'll second that.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to move the recommended actions. Can I have a roll call vote?
Commissioner Gardena?
Yes.
Commissioner Ashford?
Yes.
Commissioner Blumenberg?
Yes.
Commissioner Stevens?
Yes.
Vote carries 4-0.
All right. We'll move on to item 5, our Port District Operations Update as it relates to COVID-19.
Sure. Thanks, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chairman, Commissioners. Just really quick, a couple things. And they've been.
Sorry, we're distracted. We're hungry.
You heard in an earlier presentation, we sent out information to all our tenants. Most are already working much longer and much harder hours than the minimum hours at the village, but we do have some that have flexed their time at the village, and most, as you heard, fall within a 11 to 6, and when I say that, this relates to non-office tenants. These are your restaurants, your retailers, your entertainment uses, and so on. So that information went out in the last couple of weeks. We had thought about maybe around Memorial weekend, but we decided to match that up with the governor's June 15th date as the way to go there. So that's one. Harbor-wide, obviously the COVID-19 harbor rental abatement and deferment program will come to a conclusion on June 30th. I recall that the board's action was to provide a work payment plan that allowed more time than the city emergency ordinance regarding those deferred rents, 40% by December 31st, which can be paid at that time. There does not have to be payments before then. And then whatever remaining amounts there are for folks are equal payments between January and June of 2022. And again, that's a longer period for payment of those. And of course, the abatements for just that, those abatements that were received do not. In terms of Port District staff, same date, the June 15th date, we did ask staff who were flexing at home offices, so we kept the count of the numbers of people in the office at any one time to come back to work at their regular schedules back in their office environments. And we are waiting. I'm sure a lot of people have seen this. There's been a governor order regarding mask wearing, which is going to be followed up by Cal OSHA, a meeting tomorrow. So when we have some information from that, that'll help guide us with our staff in terms of what's expected in the office environment, whether you're vaccinated or not, and what paperwork may be required or not, and so on. So that should be coming out in the next, the next 24 hours, we should have more on that. And you've touched on it, I know Andy touched on it, or Jessica touched on it, public meetings, requirements from the governor, and I think, Mr. Chair, where we left off with bringing that back to discuss kind of the return to our meetings, what that means, what are there some things that we may want to do a little bit differently now that we have the opportunity to do that. I was going to say we're experts at Zoom, but Jessica and Todd are mostly experts on that, so there might be some opportunities there to approach the meeting. So we'll have that discussion. And I think that's really it. We're looking forward to getting the new fiscal year started. Next meeting's on July 7th. Again, that will still be remote. Help further notice, but that's what we have for you tonight, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, Commissioners, and appreciate everyone's participation tonight. And big thanks to all our managers and staff on managing crew. I know there's still going to be some hiccups along the way with some COVID issues, but I've done a tremendous job. It's been nice to work through this and be able to bring this budget to you.
Very good. Commissioners, any questions for Brian on this item? Or comments or otherwise related to COVID?
Brian, one clarification,
sure.
If I can. The you brought up the deferred rents, and then again, going back to Gloria, your presentation, we're going to collect those in the next fiscal year, but they're going to get credited to the current fiscal year. And
if
Okay, because COVID was that long. Okay. So there's some financial risk there. I
will say that our business partners at the village around the harbor, I don't know that we have anything outstanding with our master tenants that I'm aware of. And many of our village tenants have shown their resiliency. Some have already begun repaying back. Some of the deferments, again, benefits from the abatements that we're able to collect in many instances. And other brand and loan act loan funds and so on. So I think that the exposure there is not as great as we thought it could be, and that's a testament to our business partners throughout the harbor.
Okay, you obviously looked at that. Good. You good?
All right. Thanks, Mike. Any other from the commissioners? I'll not seeing any. Open up to the public. Anyone in the public want to comment? Okay, not seeing any, I'll close that portion of it. And I think this doesn't require any action by the board. So I'll thank you for that. And I'll mention here, as we wrap things up, we did lose a longtime member of our harbor community, and we are going to be adjourning tonight in honor of Fisherman Butch Sanders. So please remember Butch tonight. So. Thank you all. As Brian said, thank you all for sticking it out. This was a long one tonight, but appreciate all your patience and participation, and I guess we'll see you on the 7th
July.
July.
Yep.
We are adjourned.
Thank you.